You said you were tired of ragtime. I give you Dixieland Jazz. This is the original Dixieland Jazz Band, the Livery Stable Blues.
Another thing about horses.
Yes, yes, it's another thing about horses. I guess automobiles, cars, weren't super popular back then.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever hear the story about how, like, Manhattan had 4 vehicles at one point and 2 of them got into a crash with each other?
No.
I always imagined totally empty streets and 2 of them just crashed into each other.
Well, here's the thing. They probably only had one drivable street.
Yeah. Yeah, the rest of them are just filled with horses.
Yeah.
But I guess if you had a horse and it was a horse-based economy, you wouldn't need cars. Where would you go to get gasoline?
There had to be guys, too, back then that were, like, total skeptics. Like this shit's not going to last. Like, we have horses.
And just because you have a car doesn't mean that there's a car dealership nearby or a mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
If it broke down, you were done. You were, like, the early adopters of the iPod. It doesn't work. You're out of your $300.
Crank your car on your own.
Yeah.
Well, they all cranks then, right?
I think they were. I think some of them, even before cranks, were just button pushes. Like, anyone could just go and push a button and go a sweet 31 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a live recording of the Dixieland Jazz Band. So this is truly what it sounded like 100 years ago. The other music we had played was sheet music. So it was just a song written back then. But this is an actual recording.
From 1917.
We're opening up a window to 100 years ago. I always was fascinated with the idea that listening to a piece of old music or watching an old movie is a time machine. That's the closest thing we're going to get. We can't go back in time. We can open up this little window to the past.
I was actually just telling some younger people recently,
yeah,
that when I was a kid, most like comedies had an ape in them.
That's right.
Yeah.
You were actually telling me.
No, but I was telling younger people about this, too. They didn't buy it.
I'm technically older than you, but,
yes.
But they didn't remember that time.
Well, no, they were young. I was like explaining to them like when I was a child.
So what would they say as growing up that they saw all the time?
What would be like the comedies of now? That would be like what pops up all the time in comedies now?
Probably a lot of like cell phone humor. It always takes me out of a movie where someone's texting and they actually have the special effect where you see the words floating.
I don't like that either.
No, you don't.
No.
Like, if you're going to commit to that the whole film, okay. If your whole film is about we're always going to see what people's thoughts and texts are, fine. But if it's just one scene that pulls me out of it, I don't like it either. No.
No, not a fan.
No, it's like those R-rated movies where it's just a PG movie and then it's just one scene with cursing or nudity or violence or something.
I think the first time I saw it, though, it was kind of like my mind was blown by it. Like, oh my God, I never thought of doing this before. This is brilliant. But now, yeah, I don't like it.
Yeah, and I think it's actually quite inexpensive to pull that off. I think there's not an app per se, but you can buy a program. So if you make your own short movie, you can then add that feature in.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've seen it on The Daily Show a couple of times. So it's something that you can do within the day if you have a skilled operator for it.
Which we're not.
No, we're not. And there's no video because this is a podcast.
Okay. Okay. Eventually, I'd like to do some video here.
Yeah, that'd be
some
great.
Some picture is like an old-timey like costumes, like 1917 period wear.
Oh, yeah. You could have the striped swimwear and the bowler cap.
Mm-hmm.
I can see you really as a striped swimwear kind of guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like back then, is if you were going swimming, you had to wear a derby to go swimming in.
And the pipe.
Yeah.
What would my 1917
be? Oh, we drove all the way to the beach here, and I forgot my derby.
I'm merely wearing my 19-pound swimwear outfit, made entirely of black.
See, I'm picturing you with like a boater hat.
I could, yeah. Yeah, a boater hat, a nice seersucker suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like one of those thin bow ties that's kind of floppy.
My wife's a costumer. I'll bring this up to her.
Oh.
And she'll tell me no immediately. She'll immediately say I'm not doing that.
I have a friend who's a costumer also, and I have thought about asking her to hook us up with some 1917 gear.
Mm-hmm.
For the time being, we can just have fake mustaches.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the 1917 podcast. Ahoy, hoy.
Ahoy.
I'm your host, Jeff Ryan. Joining me, as always, is Vinny Nardiello. We are sponsored this week by the Wallace Ray Company. Make money, making donuts. New. Greaseless. Different. No experience necessary. New electric machine bakes 14 dozen per hour. All kinds. Plain. Iced. Raisin. Etc. Costs you only 16 cents per dozen. You earn up to $125 a month. Spare time. Much more full time. Start in own kitchen. Sell to restaurants, groceries, drugstores, cafeterias, plants, etc. No bookkeeping. Collect cash profits daily. Machine guaranteed. Add more as needed. Write today for free recipes. Details. No obligation. Wallace Ray Company, Waseda, Minnesota, 56093.
So this was like the single mom makes $2,500 a week at home, like, yes. Of the time.
Yes. Dentists hate him. Learn his one secret. Except it's just a machine to make donuts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not hard to make donuts. Not a good donut, it takes a while, but a bad donut, you just get a bunch of grease in a pan and put some dough in a circle and boil it, right?
Well, I think they're telling you, too, if you go sell this to a restaurant, no bookkeeping. Don't worry. You don't keep records of your work.
It's a cash business. Wink, wink. I like that the three different varieties that they have. If I asked you three donut varieties, you'd probably...
Okay. First one that's coming to mind. Chocolate.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Plain.
Plain. Okay.
Plain. And jelly.
Jelly. Okay. Or strawberry, I would go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, jelly, I could see, would be difficult because you got to find a way of putting the jelly in.
Yeah.
But the three they had in this ad were plain, which they agreed with you, iced, which, okay, fine, and raisin.
Yeah, I was thinking, I've never seen a raisin donut.
No.
I don't see why there can't be one, though.
No, but even in the hoity-toity fruity places where there's, like, a Captain Crunch on donuts and they charge $3 each, I've never seen raisins as an offering.
No. I wonder why.
Yeah, they have cinnamon raisin bagels. We're okay with round dough with raisins in it, but not in our donuts.
I don't know. See, maybe like, you know, in 1917, it was very big. Then, you know, for 20 years, people made raisin donuts. Then comes the war. Raisin rations. You can't get raisins. You can't get nylons. And the idea of raisin donuts just died out.
Did you ever hear the urban legend that the reason why there's no grape ice cream is because it's fatal to dogs?
Well, I know raisins are fatal to dogs.
Are they?
Yeah. You can't. Dogs can't eat raisins or chocolate.
I knew
raisinets, the worst thing you can give a dog.
I knew the chocolate thing. Is the raisin thing real?
As far as I know, yeah.
I've never heard anyone say you can't.
I have a dog, and I've never given her a raisin, and she's alive. So therefore, it must be true.
Well, there's no way I can disprove that claim.
Okay.
Oh, there is. Come here, Ruby. Eat these raisins.
Don't even joke about that.
I shall not even. So, in the news today, this week, January 15th through 21st, 1917... A man we all know and loved, George Dewey, has died. George Dewey, of course, Admiral of the Navy, only person in U.S. history to have attained the rank. I was very confused when I read that because I thought,
aren't there all admirals in the Navy?
Admirals in the Navy all the time. But admiral is basically being a six-star general.
Mm-hmm.
It's a six-star rank, and that's basically been retired.
Okay.
You can have generals that get up to like four stars, and there's rumors that you can get a fifth, but it's very rare. There's only a couple who have six stars. George Washington had it, I believe Lee had it, and my man George Dewey, who died this week exactly 100 years ago.
So, an admiral today in the Navy.
I think that's like a general where it'd be like a one star.
Oh.
And then when you graduate up even more, you win a battle or you kiss the right five
star. Something that sounds a little bit like Spinal Tap. It goes to 11.
It goes yeah. Where there's like a million 6-star generals because of inflation, and then they make a 7-star general.
Yeah,
yeah. I'm impressed that they've held the inflation down on the military ranks,
mm-hmm.
because I think it'd be really easy to just say, okay, we can't do anything more for you, Mr. Schwarzkopf, but. How about a 9th star? Every year you get another star, mm-hmm. so long as you stay with the military.
Yeah.
And then we'll give you one every other year after you retire. Like the Golden Parachute. Would you like to know some of the places named after George Dewey?
I would, absolutely.
Okay. Oh, none of these are good.
I don't want to know.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at this list, and it's a whole bunch of things named Dewey, like Dewey County, Oklahoma, was named in his honor. Like, I don't know what Dewey County
just
is.
Come up with Dewey from Huey, Dewey, and Louie.
The Dewey Decimal System was named after George Dewey.
Yes. He lost to Harry Truman.
That's right.
Yes. And,
my favorite soda, Mountain Dew, is named after George Dewey. The original slogan was "Do the Dewey." Dew itself is named after George Dewey. Georgetown University, also named after George Dewey, but they named it after his first name. People think it's named after George Washington.
Well, because Dewey University sounds weird.
Yeah. Anyone who says Dewey, like they're calling a pig, actually named after him.
What? Hold on. You just did the, it's Suey Pig, right?
Yeah.
Why is that a call for a pig?
I don't know. Is that something pigs say?
No, they're like...
I know things like whoa and giddy up for horses. Those are just words, and we, as humans, agreed, yeah, this is what we're going to say to horses,
yeah,
and the horses hear the same thing. And I don't think pigs are... You hear pigs are smart animals, but I don't know if they're smart enough to actually have their own language, that yeah, Suey means something.
Suey, yeah.
Yeah. Also in this week was the Silvertown explosion. We talked a lot about the Kingsland explosion last month, so we need to now give some time to the Silvertown explosion.
Well, yeah, we don't want them to be offended.
No. Well, I mean, everyone died, because it's 100 years ago when they all died in an explosion.
So even if you lived through the explosion.
Yeah. Now, the Kingsland explosion was a nice thing to talk about, because no one died.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big explosion. They were worried that we were going to enter World War I because of it. And Germany ended up having to pay reparations like 30 years later.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't admit any guilt. But, you know, if we had an argument about who owed each other $50, mm-hmm, and I said, I don't owe you $50, but I'm going to give you $50 anyways, that's a pretty clear sign I probably did owe you
$50. Well, also, all right, so it happened 30 years later. So mm-hmm, 1947.
Yeah.
In 1947, the worst thing they could think that the Germans did was an explosion in New Jersey that killed nobody. Like that's what they had to pay reparations for?
Germany was on an apology tour. Like, anything that happened, we will apologize, we will say we were guilty, and we will make reparations. We are sorry about your President Lincoln. Here is 5,000 Reichmarks. No offense. John Wilkes Booth probably has some German ancestors at some point. Danke. So, the Silvertown explosion was in the London borough of Newham. 500 long tons of TNT exploded. Long tons is how the Brits say regular tons.
Mm-hmm.
It killed 73 people and injured 400 more. Now, the UK, of course, was already in the war at this point. And this was, again, an explosion at another munitions factory, because you don't get explosions that big without putting a whole bunch of ammunition in a room and then hoping that no one lights a match or uses a
Do they have, like, conspiracy theories glass at the time? Like, no, the you know, like jet fuel doesn't melt steel. Like there had to be people like that that were like, it's an inside job.
Yeah. Now what's sad about this is, as bad as it is, 73 people dead, 400 more, it's not the biggest explosion. There was one with four times as many tons in Faversham that killed more people in 1916. And there's yet another one in Chilwell that killed even more people. It wasn't a bigger explosion, but there were more people nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the part of war that you don't think about. You think about all the soldiers dying because of being shot by other soldiers. And then if you read enough about war, you think about everyone who's dying from, like, trench foot and being bitten by rats and getting infections. And that seems like an awful way to go.
Yeah.
But there are people who are, like, on the home front, who are not in any danger at all, who are still getting blown up on a pretty regular basis because they're part of the war effort. So, the big story this week, believe it or not, is the invention of the calorie.
Okay.
So, the calorie, of course, is how we measure heat. A calorie, I believe, is how much it takes to raise 1 gram of water 1 degree. So if you had 100 calories, you could raise 1 gram of water to boiling.
Were you a good science student? You know a lot about this stuff. You're good.
Well, physicists are probably going to write in and, like, high school chem majors saying, you got that totally wrong.
Okay. I'm just taking your word for it.
Okay. Well, I can successfully BS you, and so long as no one says, no one throws the you're wrong flags on the
thing
flag.
Is, it's good if you're a science nerd, because if you don't know science, then you're just a regular nerd.
Yeah. So that's what a regular calorie is. The kilocalorie is what people invented to start talking about food.
Okay.
Because the classic example that I've heard is that people used to talk about a slice of bread as being equal. Every slice of bread is the same as every other slice of bread. And in the days before sliced bread, you could make your slice as big as you wanted. And if you're cutting a pound cake, obviously that's going to be different than if you have a slice of whole wheat or rye or... Do you think they even had rye bread in 1917?
Yeah, of course they did.
Well, it was relatively new to me. I didn't have it until an adult.
Really?
I didn't have an adventurous childhood.
No.
I think we bought rye bread one time, but it was a rye bread with caraway seeds on it, and that was an instant turn-off.
I remember, you know, when you and I were roommates, I remember you, eating, big things of cottage cheese.
I've never eaten cottage cheese. You were remembering yogurt. I ate yogurt.
No, there was cottage cheese involved.
Cottage cheese?
You ate a lot of cottage cheese.
Wait, last week you were talking about us fly fishing. We never fly fished. Now you have this very distinct memory of me eating cottage cheese by the tub.
Yeah, like just eat like a spoon and a tub of cottage cheese.
I eat so little cottage cheese, I don't recall what cottage cheese tastes like. But I ate yogurt that way. I would buy a two-pound container of yogurt, and I would eat a lot of yogurt.
Let's just say, if you remember the cottage cheese, you weren't really there.
If you're going to bring up cottage cheese, I can bring up mayonnaise, okay?
Go ahead. It's not true.
Ah, see, so you know what it's like when someone accuses you of something that you haven't actually done.
Okay. Tell a story. Go
okay, the mayonnaise stories. And I will try to tell it honestly because I wasn't actually there.
No, you weren't.
No, I was not. Was that Vinny apparently was making a sandwich, a regular sandwich with a regular amount of mayonnaise. He happened to use a spoon instead of a knife, which is what a lot of people do for their condiments. And when he was done, he happened to lick the spoon, which again, a lot of people do. One of his friends saw him doing that and then spun an elaborate story about Vinny sitting down on the couch with a jar of mayonnaise and a spoon just going to town on it like it was marshmallow fluff and he was a cartoon bear.
Yes. Well, I appreciate the fact that you told it honestly. Here's actually what it was. I was making a tuna sandwich.
Okay.
With mayo.
Yeah.
And it, using a fork. Some of it got on my finger. The mayo got on my finger as I was stirring. And I licked off my finger.
That's not bad.
No, it isn't. But this became something that has haunted me now for 20 years. It's a total lie.
Well, now it's here for posterity.
People informed my wife of this. She has no respect for me. And it's not true. Now, go back to the calories.
If you ever wondered how much calorie was in a lick of mayonnaise, it's probably around, I don't know, 8 or 9. It's pretty caloric. But those are kilocalories, of course. When we talk about food, we're talking about kilocalories. And we weren't talking about calories until 1917. There were plenty of diet fads and diet trends. There was the grapefruit diet. There was the cabbage soup diet. Mm. There were all sorts of unusual ways of eating lots of food, unusual foods. There was ways of deciding, I'm just not going to eat anything, and I'll just breathe, and that'll be fine. But a woman named Lulu Hunt Peters invented the modern idea of the calorie. And she wrote a cookbook that came out around this time that is basically still used nowadays with some changes. Her idea of dieting is what we still do dieting to this day. Her idea about calories going back to the bread idea, said that you can't look at a piece of bread and say a piece of bread. You need to look at it as the amount of calories in the bread.
Mm-hmm.
So a slice of bread that's 100 calories, if you double it in thickness, that's 200 calories. You are now eating two slices of bread. Or to her mind of thinking, you were eating 200 calories. And the way to lose weight is to very simply cut your calories.
Mm-hmm.
But that means you need to change your way of thinking about food, which is a way a lot of people look at the whole world. If you're having a cookie, you're no longer having a cookie. You need to do the calculus. You need to figure out the weight of what this is doing.
Do you have a calorie counter on your phone? Do you count?
My wife has one of those.
I have it too.
You do?
I'm pretty lazy about it, though.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. She's complained that it's made her eat worse. And she explained why, which is fascinating. Because if you make a sandwich, or let's say a BLT. In the old days, you just said, okay, I had a BLT. I won't put too much mayonnaise on it, and I won't have really fatty bacon. I'll have a lean cut of bacon. But if you're putting it into this app, you need to figure out the calories of the lettuce, the calories of the bacon, the calories of the tomato, the calories of each piece of bread.
It only works if you're someone who eats, like, I'm just going to eat one ingredient.
Right.
My whole lunch is going to just be, I'm going to eat a pork shoulder. And that's what I'm going to have for lunch. And there's no other ingredients involved, just a pork shoulder that's been grilled or roasted.
And she found out that besides one ingredient, packaged food is a lot easier because packaged food has the calorie count on it.
Yeah.
You know exactly how many calories you're getting if you drink a 2-liter bottle of Diet Pepsi.
Mm-hmm.
And not that that's what she was doing, but it was much easier for her to think, I'm going to go for the processed food because then I can just get this in the app.
Well, also,
because
it already knows it, too. I was already programmed in.
Yeah.
If you cook for yourself, it's a pain in the ass.
So if you are interested in the book that Lulu Hunt Peters wrote, it is called Diet and Health with Key to the Calories. It came out in 1918, but her theories began in 1917 because she wasn't just thinking about ways of reducing, as the phrase went, reducing women to look good in their flapper gear. She was thinking about ways of winning the war because we are going to be going into World War
I. And we need thinner women for the war.
We needed thinner women for our boys to come home to.
Exactly. You needed to have something to fight for.
Yes. But you also needed a way of feeding soldiers that would allow all the soldiers to be fed. As the saying goes, an army marches on its stomach. And so if she found a way of shaving some calories off each soldier, but not in a way that was harmful, then she would make the soldier more fit and she'd save more food so that more people would be able to eat. And so they would be able to give food to the whole world because there were famines going on during World War I because there weren't enough people to plow the fields and get the crop in.
So what you're saying is if it were not for Lulu Hunt Peters, we'd be speaking German right now.
Yes. Now, she had personal experience as someone whose weight fluctuated. She once weighed as much as 220 pounds,
mm-hmm.
but she got down to about half that, and she did it through calorie reduction. Calorie reduction is basically what all diets, other than the Atkins ketosis stuff, is based on.
Have you ever done any like weird diets of any kind?
I read a book last year, the Penn Jillette book, where he went on a weird diet. For the first 2 weeks, it was all potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mono food diet, and he never explained it as such, but I liked the idea of just eating one food because it made you just sick of food, and then any other food you brought in tasted fantastic. After 2 weeks of potatoes, if you eat one stick of celery, it's the greatest thing you've ever eaten.
So then you can just eat healthy after that.
Then you can introduce healthy foods, and then they don't feel like healthy foods. They feel like indulgent foods.
I've never done anything too weird. I did Atkins like once, and that never worked out. But I remember working with a guy who was on a hard-boiled egg diet, where he ate nothing but hard-boiled eggs.
I have to ask about the emissions.
I didn't get that close.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was so proud. He seemed like all proud, like I'm peeling. It was the kind of thing where he wanted everybody to comment.
I see.
On his hard-boiled eggs that he was eating.
Yeah.
So they make a big show of like taking them out and cracking them and all the breakfast eggs and lunch eggs.
I haven't made a big show about this, but I've been thinking about a vegetarian diet. And that was one of my New Year's resolutions. Unfortunately, I made it like 2 days after I bought a huge, huge quantity of ham. So I've been hitting the ham hard while at the same time thinking, oh boy, only 3 more weeks until I can be a vegetarian for real.
Ham hard has to be a euphemism for something, but I don't know what it would be.
Yeah, look it up on Urban Dictionary, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about 3 weeks away from having no more meat in the house, after which point I'll probably buy more meat, and this will just be a thought in the back of my head forever and ever.
But your kids aren't going to be vegetarian.
No.
So what do you do with their leftovers?
I would probably eat them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because to quote Hamilton, I'm super dead. That chicken nugget is not going to be any more alive if I put it in the trash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to waste the food there.
Right.
And I'm circling. When my daughters are eating, I'm waiting to see what they leave. Like, ooh, like a bread crust, nice.
You're like a pigeon?
No, yeah, I live like a raccoon.
We went to a drive-in restaurant one time. This is about 2 years ago, and we pull up, and we're going to eat in the car because we've gotten our food. And there's a trash bin next to us, and a raccoon crawls out of it. This is about like 4:30 in the afternoon. And I'm so stunned, I point, but I can't say anything because I'm literally speechless. Mm-hmm. And Cindy's looking at me, and she's not sure why. And what I'm trying to say is, there is a raccoon 4 feet away from you. Yeah. But I couldn't say it, I just pointed. And then she kept on looking at like my finger to see if I had like ketchup on my finger or something. Yeah. And by the time she looked around, the raccoon had like scooted away a little bit. And it had its bounty, which I think was some french fries, and then it climbed up a tree, and it just ate the french fries and was watching us while we were watching it.
They are the grossest animal, probably.
I don't know. They can't be the grossest
I don't find animal. Them cute. No, possums. Because possums are like ugly raccoons.
Yeah, I'll give you that possums are below raccoons in the charismatic megafauna sweepstakes.
And I don't think anyone's ever even tried to make a cartoon of possums.
Oh, there have to have been. Was Foofer a possum? No, he was a dog.
Who's Foofer?
You don't remember Foofer?
No.
He was from the USA Cartoon Express.
I know USA Cartoon Express.
Yeah. Yeah, they rotated...
All the Hanna-Barbera cartoons?
Yeah, they rotated a lot of characters in. One of them was like a southern bloodhound dog named Foofer. I don't remember much about it. I think he was literally blue because in the South they call dogs blue.
You're not thinking of Huckleberry Hound?
I could be thinking of Huckleberry Hound. Wasn't he pink?
He was blue.
He was blue? Who was... Oh, Snagglepuss was pink.
And, yes.
Yes.
And what kind of animal was he? Was he a big cat? Was he a... He wasn't a tiger.
He was a panther, like the Pink Panther.
So he was another Pink Panther.
Another Pink Panther, except they decided he was going to be like a gay southern gentleman. It's been a long time since I've seen any of these. But there has to be an opossum. Oh. The cartoon movie Over the Hedge, William Shatner played a possum, and he had these like dramatic death sequences because he's William Shatner.
And he's playing possum.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. There is an animated possum. I have no idea how we got to possum.
I don't know, but I want to look up Foofer now. I want to see. All right. I'm going to look up Foofer. How do you spell it?
F-O-R. No, F-O-O-F-U.
All right, so.
Okay, diagnostic proof.
Well, Foofer. No, here's what I was going to tell you. I'm going to look up Foofer. I want you to tell me what you think you remember him looking like.
Okay.
And then we'll see if you're right about it.
Very well.
Hold on.
I believe I said that he was a blue bloodhound dog.
Okay, let's see.
I remember him being like.
All right, you're right. He is blue.
He is blue. Okay,
he's blue. He kind of looks a little bit like Blue from Blue's Clues.
Okay, is he like a very large dog?
He like Marmadukeish.
I didn't imagine him that big.
Yeah, he's much bigger than the other dogs. I've never seen this cartoon. I don't know how I did. I definitely watched, huge amounts of television.
Yeah. I think I remember him being on a flat-bottom skiff at one point. It was like the Louisiana South.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know this cartoon at all. And you're right. I don't know how we got here.
We are on to Nickelodeon. Nickelodeon is our attempt to teach you about 1917 via the movies, the silver screen. So every week we're going to recommend a different film either from 1917 or about 1917. We've somehow avoided true World War I movies. We talked about Lawrence of Arabia, which is World War I, but not the World War I people think of. Mm-hmm. It's about the Arab campaign. And we talked about The Englishman Who Went Up a Hill and Came Down a Mountain, which takes place in Wales, which is not really where people were dying in World War I. But we are now on to a very long engagement. A French film made just a couple of years ago with the lady from Amelie in it, directed by the guy who did Amelie. There's probably other actors from Amelie in it because I think he likes the same people. I swear to you, I have seen this movie and not just seen Amelie and recommending it on behalf of Amelie fans.
I like Amelie.
Yeah. Have you seen A Very Long Engagement?
No.
So the premise of A Very Long Engagement...
We do lots of movies that I haven't seen.
Well, you can pick a movie next week.
Okay.
Next week you can pick a movie, and maybe it's one I haven't seen. But that's going to be a challenge, because I spent a lot of time on the couch by myself. Not to brag or anything. But
You should be fatter.
I should.
Yeah,
I definitely should.
Yeah, like I'm looking at you. You're a thin guy.
There were
someone who has like one of the more sedentary lifestyles that I've ever seen.
There were entire years where, like, starting at 4:30, I would just go to TVGuide.com and I'd look at what was going on every evening and I'd chart my evening. Like, okay, I can start with this 6 o'clock movie and then change the channel, go to this 8 o'clock movie, and then oh, there's a 9:45 movie that's going to overlap with this one. So I'm going to have to start the 9:45 movie and then stay up late to watch the end of my 8 o'clock movie on HBO 2.
Now, question, did you do this as a kid? You had a TV guide. And you would basically chart your night based on which movies had nudity in them.
I don't think I did, but I am familiar with the concept.
Yeah.
Not when I was a kid.
Because I did it. And then our friend James Brennan, he told me he did this as well, and I thought I was the only one.
I think it's because they make it so easy for you back in the day, because they would list what was in each movie. V for violence, yeah. N for nudity.
And sometimes you'd sit through, like, a two-hour movie just to see, like 3 seconds of nipple in this two-hour movie.
There was a very good article in Entertainment Weekly a couple years ago talking about how one of the reasons why people went to movies up until 10 years ago was incidental nudity. Mm-hmm. Because that was the only way they could get it. And now, thanks to the internet, if you want to see someone naked, you just type in whoever it is and naked, and then you can see them.
Yeah. No one. Yeah, it's immediate.
Yeah. So it's a real bracing shock now if you see nudity in the movies. Or on a television show, especially.
I remember the same guy, James, he told me that one of the big ones that he used to watch while was Dream on HBO. That was always one of the ones that he would check to see if there's nudity in this episode.
Do you know how that show came to be?
No.
There was a library.
How do you have that information ready to go? hold on, let me talk a little bit about Brian Benben.
I don't know. And
I've read his biography several times.
The metadata of how this information came into my head has been lost. It's been scrubbed. But there was a library of old content of TV shows and movies from the 1950s and early 60s. It was all in black and white. And they were going to lose copyright on it unless they did something with it. And this was in the days before you could just press it on DVD. And no one wanted to buy this as a rerun. So what they did was they came up with the show Dream On, where this guy who grew up watching these shows would have all these, like, 2-second flashbacks mm-hmm. to all of the different shows and movies he watched growing up. But they were all the library of stuff that they needed to repurpose just to show, look, this showed up for 2 seconds, therefore we keep the copyright.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise it would have gone into public domain.
So the show only existed for this reason.
Yes. And then there's like, we need to do something other than just show 2-second clips of old courtroom dramas that no one remembers from the 40s. Why don't we add some nudity? Because we're on HBO.
Mm-hmm.
And then it survived for like over 100 episodes, right?
It was up for a good amount. I liked it as a kid. And I don't know if I liked it because I liked it or because you would get to see a boob.
I did try to watch this show, and I believe I had to tap out because I just didn't understand it. All of the flashbacks made no sense to me, because it wasn't like he was flashing back to good movies or good TV shows. It was always stuff I never had heard of before, and I felt like because I didn't...
You were missing the joke.
Yeah, because I didn't know the reference, I wasn't getting the joke. I felt the same way about the Swedish Chef growing up. Hand to God, I thought everyone else understood Swedish, and I didn't.
Well, speaking of this, do you think Muppet Babies was created with the same premise? Because they would always flash back to those old...
That I at least understood, because those were cartoons, although it did straddle the line when they went to actual Star Wars clips, because it was like, that's the real movie, that's not a cartoon version of the movie. But I did feel very inferior whenever the Swedish Chef was on, because I felt like I couldn't laugh because I didn't understand what he was saying, and I didn't get that the joke was that you couldn't understand what he was saying.
You thought everyone else was in on this... You know,
I thought everyone else
beautiful Swedish
truly did speak Swedish. Like my 4-year-old brother learned how to speak Swedish and just never told me about it because everyone else was smarter than me. So the plot of A Very Long Engagement was that if you got like a $1 million injury, you could leave the front. But because so many people wanted to leave the front because it was a terrible thing, it couldn't just be, oh, I've been shot. You need to be shot in a very particular place. You needed to be shot on your right index finger because that was your trigger finger.
Okay.
So the movie begins with a whole bunch of cowardly guys who didn't want to be there anymore in the middle of a trench warfare battle holding up their fingers to have them blown off. And fingers are one of my like weak points. I'm perfectly fine if I see a guy get stabbed in the stomach 100 times. Mm-hmm. But if I see a finger go...
By fine, you mean turned on.
You can dream on yourself. But if I see a finger go, or if I see like a neck injury, or an eyeball, or a knee, those are my weak points.
So finger, neck, eyeball.
And I realize as I'm telling you this, you're now plotting your way of attacking me if it ever comes to that. Step one, go for the eyes.
I think most people would be grossed out by an eyeball attack.
Yeah, but some people are like ears are really bad for them, or noses are bad. There's a lot of people who have persistent dreams about their teeth falling out. I don't have any problem with that.
No, I never had that dream either. I've heard about this dream, the teeth falling out dream.
No. And I'm fine with most any sort of, like, puncture wound injury, unless it's eyeballs.
Why does a finger bother you so much?
I flash forward to the whole rest of this guy's life. All of the typing he's not going to be able to do. All of the doorbell ringing.
How much typing were people doing at the time?
Maybe not at the time, but doorbell ringing is probably a daily occurrence. And you just always think, oh. All of the kids were going to be scared when he waves and then they go, oh. All of like the second and third and fourth and fifth and sixth looks because you see someone who you think is missing a finger, but you're not sure.
I remember one time years ago, I had a Hooters waitress who was missing a finger.
Oh, yeah?
Which is, all right, I can, I'm not grossed out by a missing finger, but like, on a Hooters waitress, it's a little distracting, you know?
Did you think that it was like a workplace injury? Like she was reaching into the fryer later and the finger came out?
Yeah, it just seemed like a weird thing. But I guess if you're running a Hooters, an attractive woman comes in, big boobs, you can't.
You can't say because you only have 9 fingers, you're not allowed to work here?
That might be illegal. I don't know.
It's probably more illegal to discriminate on the basis of hotness as a reason to hire a waitress.
Now, I haven't been to Hooters in a long time, but I also remember that they had a policy against tattoos in Hooters.
That seems like a real contradiction in terms.
Which I imagine now, every girl under 30 has several tattoos. There literally aren't any who don't have tattoos.
Right.
So they'd have Band-Aids covering their tattoos.
Like a temporary Band-Aid that they put on new every day?
They put on to cover, yeah. So they all just look like they got cut. That's...
Welcome to Hooters/Fight Club.
Yeah, someone just cut them. Ain't gonna be pretty no more there, Hooter girl.
We are on to our last segment, birthdays. Congratulations to Ernest Borgnine, who was born 100 years ago this week. Are you a big Ernest Borgnine fan?
I actually am. But yeah. Who isn't?
He was on a sitcom when he was like 80, and I had to hand it to him. As someone who didn't need to work anymore, he was in a sitcom with guys like a third his age.
You don't know they didn't need to work.
Okay, okay. I will take it back. Ernest Borgnine died in poverty.
He's destitute, yes.
He was living in a cardboard box underneath the Santa Monica Freeway, selling oranges.
Well, you know, I imagine it was, you know, he's in those movies in like the 50s, and, you know, they probably paid him the way they did 1950s ballplayers.
Okay, I've got a quiz I'm going to come up on the fly for you. I'm going to ask you a question, and you tell me if this is the name of an Ernest Borgnine episode or a Seven of Nine episode of Star Trek Voyager.
Wait, an Ernest Borgnine episode of what?
An Ernest Borgnine movie.
Ernest Borgnine movie, okay.
Yeah. I could just ask you about the sitcom he was in, A Single Guy, but I don't want to do that.
I don't remember the sitcom at all.
Really? It was one of the many, many sitcoms that they put after Friends, and the idea of, oh, people like 20-somethings. Just put a bunch of 20-somethings in a sitcom and you're done.
Did they know Ernest Borgnine was in his 80s?
I don't think they did. I think they were like, we need someone just a little bit older. just a little bit more experience in our 20-somethings. Call Ernie Borgnine.
Well, I love Poseidon Adventure. Some of my favorite movies.
Yeah, and he's great in Ice Station Zebra, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he was Oscar-nominated in Marty.
Marty, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is... You have Ernie Borgnine,
mm-hmm.
and they match him up with this woman. The whole idea is that this woman's not attractive enough. Now, the way they make her not attractive is she has a bad haircut. Like they take a perfectly fine looking woman, give her a bad haircut, put her in a like a shitty dress, and we're supposed to believe that pig face Ernie Borgnine's gonna lower himself. To be with this woman.
Well, I always thought that Borgnine himself was not supposed to be an attractive guy.
No, and that's the thing. But yeah. It's like, but he's still like, you know, looking for a hot woman.
Right. It's a really hard thing to talk about or to understand in movies because you don't always want to have beautiful people, and sometimes you cast beautiful people as ugly people, and the old joke about glasses and a ponytail for women, but it's harder when there are plain-looking people who are playing plain-looking people, and there's dialogue that's making fun of the way they look.
Mm-hmm.
And I was justified by saying, like, that line was written before the actress was cast. The actress is just trying to attain the part by looking this way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's hear this Ernie Borgnine quiz.
Oh. Ernest Borgnine? Real name, Ernest Borgnine. I don't know why I found that so funny. It's not like any sort of stage game. Okay. Ready to begin the quiz?
Yes, I am.
Okay. First one. This is going to be challenging. Start you off with a hard one. Small Soldiers. Is that an Ernest Borgnine movie, or is that a Star Trek Voyager 7 of 9 episode?
I don't know anything about Star Trek. I know Small Soldiers was a movie with... little, like little action figures, right? And they came alive. But I don't remember Ernest Borgnine being in this movie.
It's a movie that needs a grandfather, probably.
Ernest Borgnine.
Ernest Borgnine, yes.
Okay.
Next. Parallax.
Okay, this sounds like either it was a B movie that Ernie Borgnine did in 1978 following the black hole, or... let's see. Star Trek.
Yes, okay. Star Trek Voyager.
But he did do some sci-fi, so it's possible.
Yeah, he did Ice Station Zebra. Skeleton Coast.
Skeleton Coast. All right, let's see, they're in space, so there wouldn't be a coast in space, really. So, Ernie Borgnine.
Borgnine, you are correct. Okay. When Time Ran Out.
Borgnine.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
All right. That one was just a guess.
State of Flux.
All right, Flux. That sounds like a space word.
Good.
Star Trek.
Excellent. You are hitting for the cycle, my friend. Holiday...
Just admit, you're not a sports fan. You don't actually know what that means.
Hitting for the cycle, I believe, involves getting a hot dog, a beer, a soda, and a popcorn?
Well, yeah, the food version of it, yes.
Okay. But there's a sports version of it?
Yes, me here for the cycle.
What does hitting for the cycle mean then?
When you go through the, you know, like Yeah, a single, double, all the...
Oh, so you need a single, double, a triple, and then do you need a home run as well?
Yeah.
What about a grand slam?
No.
What about a bunt?
No.
What about an infield fly?
No.
What about a foul?
No. Give me another Ernie Borg.
Okay, that's good because I'm out of baseball. Law and disorder.
Let's see. Well, I remember Ernest Borgnine in the movie Super Fuzz, and he played a cop in that. So I imagine it's a cop movie right around the same era. Ernie Borgnine.
Good, good.
You remember Super Fuzz?
No, I don't remember Super Fuzz.
They had an Italian actor playing a cop, but like okay. An American cop, but he still had like an Italian accent in it.
Was it Giancarlo Giannini?
I have no idea. And I think he was even dubbed in some scenes, too.
Super Fuzz. I'm looking it up.
This was a HBO classic from the back in the day.
Oh, wow. It looks like he's farting his way to fight crime. Oh, it looks like it's an Italian film. With some American actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they had an Italian guy playing like an American cop. I think they just dubbed him.
Salvatore Borghese playing Paradise Alley? Okay, next question. Nemesis. Ernest Borgnine movie, 7 of 9 episode.
This is Voyager.
Yes.
What does 7 of 9 mean anyway?
She was a Borg, so she said that she was number 7 of 9, so there were guys, I guess there were 9 Borg that were converted people at the same time, and she was number 7. Then her whole identity was that she was the 7th human who was turned.
Okay.
Okay, final one. Holiday hookers.
This sounds like a boring movie that I have to see.
I'll give you a little bit more information on Holiday Hookers.
Who do you play in Holiday Hookers?
I hope not a Holiday Hooker.
Santa. He played Santa.
This looks like an Italian film. You didn't know this. I didn't know this. Maybe you did know this. But Ernest Borgnine went to Italy and made a bunch of Italian films where he was like the only American, and then they dubbed everyone else into English.
Yeah.
I think this
Super Fuzz.
Yeah. Super Fuzz was the same thing. These are all just Italian names. These people don't have pictures on IMDb. They don't have last names.
You almost get the feeling Ernest Borgnine wasn't even aware that this was a movie about hookers, probably.
No. I think he just showed up in the room and goes, "Hey, this camera's nice. I'm an actor. I get a discount." So that concludes our quiz of
probably
Ernest Borgnine.
Like all the thought into it is like, you know, Krusty the Clown recording the talking Krusty doll.
That concludes this week's episode of 100 Years Ago Today, the 1917 podcast. As always, we will see you again in 100 years. Ahoy, hoy.
Ahoy, hoy.